Slacking Ambition, episode 39.
Are you constantly procrastinating when it comes to your big dreams? You've come to the right place. It's Slacking Ambition with your host, Matt Wells. What's holding you back?
Oh, hey there. How's it going, Slackers? I'm glad you're back. It's your old pal, Matt Wells, here. Welcome to Slacking Ambition, episode 39. I really appreciate you taking the time to download and listen to this episode. This week, I'm talking to Sharon Lipinski. Sharon has a website called bestlifehabits.com, also has a book called 365 Ways to Live Generously, Simple Habits for a Life That's Good for You and for Others. Now, Sharon is an expert on habits, how to create habits, how to break bad habits, what is important about habits and how are they a key to success and why they're so powerful, things like that. And we talk about all these things in this episode, and it's very informative. You know, I really learned a lot because habits are a pernicious thing because, you know, it takes a lot of effort to build up new habits and it takes a lot of effort to break bad habits, and there's a right way and a wrong way to do it, and she has a wealth of information on that. So make sure you check out the show notes page for this episode over at slackingambition.com/39, and you can link to her book, her website, and all that good stuff. So without further ado, my interview with Sharon Lipinski. My guest this week on Slacking Ambition, Sharon Lipinski of bestlifehabits.com. Sharon, thanks so much for being on the show.
Oh, so delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
So Sharon, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
So my name's Sharon Lipinski. I run a website where I help people create habits. And I'm obsessed with habits because they're such a powerful tool for helping us achieve our goals, whether those goals are physical, mental, emotional. So that's what I do. Is there anything else that you might like to know about me?
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about, why you focus on habits so much. And, how you came to focus on that.
Well, I came through habits, actually, a little bit of a side door. I was focusing on generosity. So I always thought of myself as a kind person, a generous person, an honest person, a hardworking person. But I had an experience where I took an older man out for Thanksgiving dinner. I knew we were both going to be alone. I didn't really know him very well. And so I invited him. I said, would you like to spend Thanksgiving dinner with me at a Chinese restaurant? And I honestly hoped he'd say no, because I wanted to feel good about asking, but this kind of made me nervous. It wasn't something that I really wanted to do. But he said yes. So I picked him up and we drove into town and we shared plates of sesame chicken and beef with broccoli while he talked about his kids. And as I was sitting there looking at him and listening to him, I just had this very profound experience. Here was a man who regretted his past, and he was a father who loved his kids. He was proud of his kids, and he was a human being who just didn't have an opportunity to talk to people who cared about him and listen what was important to him. And I got it, like, at that moment. Like, this is what life is about. It is these small, everyday acts of generosity that make life worth living. And at the same time I'm having that realization, I'm having to have kind of an honest conversation with myself is, well, why don't you do it, right? I was honest, kind, hardworking, but I wasn't giving as much as I should. And there were a lot of reasons for that, but one of them is it wasn't my habit. It wasn't something that I did automatically and unconsciously. And if it's not automatic and unconscious, then all sorts of things will come get in the way. So part of that was, well, I don't want to look stupid. I might do it wrong. I don't even have time to notice. Like, I'm so busy that I'm not even picking up on these opportunities where I could do something nice for somebody. And so I started a nonprofit where what I did is I made giving easy. I made it regular. I made giving a habit. So now I facilitate virtual giving circles to help people make a habit of philanthropy. And as I was doing that process, I read a book called The Power of Habit, and I realized, like, wow, what I did for philanthropy actually works for every other area of my life too. Exercising, what I eat, I mean, you name it, habits can help you do it easier and better.
Wow. Wow. That's a really inspiring story. Giving back is so important. It really helps to build up our own internal confidence and self-image when we know that we're helping others as well as ourselves. So Sharon, what exactly is a habit and why are they so powerful?
So when we're talking about habit, we're actually talking about an actual physical phenomenon that happens in your brain. A habit is a routine of behavior that is repeated regularly and tends to occur unconsciously. And so inside your brain, what that looks like is neural wiring, and it connects the beginning of an action to the end of an action. And when you do something new, you're doing it for the first time, your brain has to work really hard at it. All the neurons along that path are going to fire. But the next time you do it, it's a little bit easier, right? So your brain isn't going to work nearly as hard. We're going to have a few less neurons fire. Repetition is the mother of habit. And as you repeat the action over and over, the neural pathway in that brain gets deeper and deeper, allowing fewer and fewer neurons to fire in order to complete your task. And when something is a habit, it's just the neurons at the beginning and at the end of the task that are firing. And the bulk of that action, you're on autopilot. And I know you've experienced this in your own life. Do you remember learning how to drive?
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah. So when I learned how to drive, I learned how to drive on a stick shift. And it was an overwhelming experience in the beginning, right? Because you have to pay attention to the lights and the signs and the other drivers. And I also had to learn how to press in on the clutch and put the car in gear and then put my foot down on the gas at the right pressure while I'm lifting off on the clutch at the right pressure. So in the beginning, like, all I could do was focus on driving. But now, have you ever gotten in your car in your driveway and arrived at your destination and think, how did I get here? Right?
No, never.
Never. You are a remarkable person then. But, you know, it's just we go on autopilot. The beginning of the neurons fire, we get in the car. And in the meantime, we're thinking about, well, here are the phone calls I need to make when I get to the office. This is what I got to get from the grocery store. And then we arrive at our destination, neurons fire, task ended. That's a habit. And habits are so powerful because they're shortcuts for the brain. And the truth is that the healthiest people, the happiest people, the most productive people, they aren't born differently than you or me or anybody else. They just have better habits. They're doing more of the right things automatically and unconsciously without having to think about it. And since habit is the shortcut for the brain, I mean, it literally frees up more energy. So if you can reduce the number of decisions that you have to make, if you can do things automatically and unconsciously, you have more energy left over for the things where you really do need it. You know, so if you're an entrepreneur, it's strategizing about your marketing or brainstorming about, you know, new product offerings. That's where you need your energy. You don't need it for deciding to exercise. You don't need it on, you know, what am I going to eat today? Let those things happen on autopilot.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, forming new habits does take time. How long does it take to form a new habit? Is there any research to show a specific amount of time?
There is research. And I think what's most interesting is that if you ask people how long it takes to make a habit, they'll typically say 21 days. That's the most popular number that's repeated in pop culture. That number was made up. In 1960, somebody took a tiny little piece of research that actually applied not at all to habits, and they've been repeating it as fact ever since. It does not take 21 days to make a habit. University of College London researchers observed people taking habits, and what they found is that it took anywhere from 18 days to 254 days to create a new habit. Are you wondering what the difference is between a habit that takes 18 days and one that takes 254 days?
Absolutely.
Well, it's going to be totally obvious to you once I say it. The truth is that some habits are easy And some habits are hard, right? You know, these easy habits, if you just want to drink more water, if you just want to floss your teeth, if you just want to have, like, every day you want to do an end of day to-do list, these kind of habits, they can be easy for people to establish. But habits like exercising, changing our eating habits, meditating, these are hard habits because we have a lot of resistance built in. We have history, we have emotion about not being able to do it. We're attached to the way we've always done it, right? And if you think those habits are hard, let's talk about relationship habits. Because by and large, you interact with people in pretty much the same way. What do you guys talk about? What do you do together? Those sorts of things. But if you want to change those habits, not only are you bringing all of your emotional baggage to it, they're bringing all of their emotional baggage to it too. So what I like to tell people is that how long it's going to take you to create a new habit is going to depend on you. It depends on the habit you're trying to form, on your motivation for starting it, how much pleasure you get from doing it, how much support you get from friends and family. And there's probably a bunch of other factors involved in that too. And the harder the habit is, you should just expect it to take longer to create.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, and a big part of that has to do, in my opinion and experience, has to do with willpower. I mean, when you form that new habit, you have to work at it at first and set aside the time and then stick with that time that you've set aside and actually follow through on it. But, you know, that would lead me to ask, is that all there is to it? I mean, how do we create a new habit?
Right. Well, so this is the mistake that people make, because you're right that creating a new habit, it's not easy. It takes time. It takes energy. It takes effort. But the single biggest mistake that people make is that they rely on their willpower to make this happen. So it might help if we talk about what willpower is. So willpower is a form of mental energy. We use this energy to control our thoughts, our emotions, our impulses, our performance. And so, you know, what people think is like, well, you just got to be more tough. You got to stick it out. You just need more willpower. But unfortunately, your willpower isn't there for you when you need it most. And when you need it most is when you're, you know, deciding whether or not you're going to exercise or what you're going to eat for dinner. And there are three reasons why your willpower might not be there for you when you need it. So first, it helps to think of willpower like the tank of gasoline in your car. Every time you drive your car, you're using up your gas. And when your gas is gone, what happens?
You stall.
That's it. You can't drive anywhere, right? And your willpower is the same way. You get one tank of willpower for everything. So every time you make a decision, you're using up a little bit of that willpower. Every time you resist an impulse, right? And you choose the polite thing to say when you wanted to be snarky. Every time you force yourself to answer that email that you don't want to answer. All of those hundreds of tiny decisions and actions, and they estimate we're making 35,000 decisions every day right now, and 250 of those decisions alone are related to our food choices. So this is draining that tank of willpower. So sometimes your willpower isn't there for you because you've just plain used it up, and that tank needs to be refilled. But there are two other reasons willpower can fail you. The second is that you could be under physical stress. So willpower is a form of mental energy, but it runs with glucose and sleep. It's actually fueled by your body. So if you're tired and hungry, you're running on fumes. And, you know, you've probably had this experience where it's at the end of a long, hard day. You didn't get a great night's sleep the night before. And now you're thinking, well, is it macaroni and cheese or that salad, right? And that macaroni and cheese is calling you. Your willpower is not there for you. The body wants to be refilled with this glucose, so your willpower caves. Or it could be failing because of emotional stress. So if you're worried about something, if it's your money, if your relationship, if you keep going over thoughts over and over in your head, right? How am I going to pay my bills? What's going to happen if my employer or my mother-in-law does this thing? What am I going to do if this deal falls through? What if I go to this networking event and they have food there that I know I shouldn't eat? Every time you pick this thought up and put it back down, you're draining that tank of willpower, and it makes it harder for you to resist temptation the next time. So I I don't want people to rely on willpower because it's a very unreliable resource.
Yeah, and slackers, you know, on that note, the just because you told yourself maybe in the morning that you were going to do something, or maybe that you weren't going to do something that you know you need to do or shouldn't be doing that day, that doesn't, just because you didn't follow through on that, just because you, let's, you know, for lack of a better word, failed at that, doesn't mean that you're a failure. It doesn't mean that you're incapable of still working towards that. It's important not to beat yourself up over it and let yourself be defeated by it. It's important that you realize that there's a reason for it and that it can be addressed.
So yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry, Matthew, go ahead.
No, go after. No, not at all. So, you know, you talk about in your book, the 7 essential habits every person needs to have. What are those 7 essential habits?
So what I've discovered is that it's all about generosity. And I know that when people think about generosity, they think it means giving to other people. And yes, that is part of it, right? It's about tipping over your cup to give to others. But it's also about giving to you, because you are that foundation. And that foundation, that needs to be strong and solid. But while taking care of ourselves is critical, we have this other part of ourselves that we have a deep human need to take care of other people, desire to make a contribution. And so when your cup is full, because you've given yourself what you need to be physically, emotionally, spiritually healthy, you will actually have more to give to other people to make the kind of difference that you want to make in the world. So there are 7 habits. The first is physical health. And my definition of physical health does not include weight, because weight is not an indicator of health, period. You can be skinny and unhealthy. You can be heavy and be fairly healthy. So what I like to focus on, and that's also, I also don't focus on weight, because our weight is impacted by lots of things that we can't control. Biological, digestive, genetic factors. But here's what you can control when it comes to your physical health. Exercising, eating right, and getting enough sleep. So that's what I want people to focus on under their physical health. The second habit is mindfulness. And mindfulness can include meditation, but it's actually much more than that. Mindfulness is just noticing each thought, feeling, body sensation, surrounding environment in the moment as you're experiencing it without judging it as good or bad. So that's the second habit. Third is about relationships, because the quality of our life is directly related to the quality of our relationships. So you want to make a habit of nurturing those people in your life. Habit 4 is connecting with yourself, because one of the most important relationships you have is the one you have with you. And the right habits here will help you nurture your spirituality, will help you feel more confident, will help you enjoy your life more, will help you feel more peace and happiness, because really, feeling confident is a habit, that, or lack of it is a habit that we've gotten used to creating, but we can change that. Habit 5 is gratitude. And this is a keystone habit. It really just impacts every area of your life. Physical health, emotional health, work relationships, personal relationships, you name it, gratitude can help it. And then habit 6 is simplicity. And simplicity is one of the essential 7 habits, because simplicity makes room in your life for what's important to you. It's not about not being busy. It's not about not buying stuff. It's about directing your resources, whether that's time, space, money, energy, and directing it towards what's most important to you and letting go of everything else. And then the 7th habit is philanthropy. And this is where the rubber meets the road, because if you want to make the world a better place, you have to do something about it. So you have to make a habit of giving time and money to causes that you care about. In my book, I don't know if we've talked about my book yet, but 365 Ways to Live Generously, I cover each of these habits one a week. So over the course of 365 days, you can make these a practice in your own life.
Wow, that's really inspiring, actually, because all those things are healthy habits to have individually. But when you put them all together, it really starts to, I can see how it would really start to take shape in an overall way of not just self-improvement, but self-contentment and being okay with who you are, both the good and the bad.
Yeah.
And Slackers,
and that's what I believe. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to let Slackers out there know that we will be linking to your book over at our show notes page, slackingambition.com/39.
Yeah, and it's important. I want people to know that there is a myth that we have to choose between professional success and personal success, that you can have a life that is good for you and good for others. And a life that includes professional success without personal success is not truly successful.
Powerful words. You talk about exercise and the first habit there of physical health, and exercise and not just getting fit, but just getting moving, really getting a little sweaty as often as you can is something that I really try to drive home here on Slacking Ambition, because it makes such an overall difference in how your, not just your body, but your mind works. Slackers have heard me talk about this over and over because it's so true. And it's been such a huge improvement in my life since I made it a point to not be so sedentary. But, you know, starting an exercise routine is one of the hardest things that people do, that they try. And it's often one of the things that they fail at the most. So it's an area that slackers slack on more than many others. So what are some of the mistakes that people make when trying to start an exercise routine?
Yeah, great question. And I'm so with you on the exercise. It's a keystone habit. It's foundational. And no matter what your level of health, when I say exercise, you know, we're not talking about marathons, unless that's your thing and you love marathons, but any movement, any exercise, you have to move your body every day. And so I like to start creating an exercise habit by getting very clear on why it's important and getting very deep on this why, you know, because I think sometimes we shortcut this process. Say like, oh, I want to be thin. Oh, I want to look great in a swimsuit. But we're not emotionally invested in this. So why? Like, really, why is it important? Who is depending on you? Who are you letting down? What is not being physically active preventing you from doing or achieving your life? And just getting in touch with what those values are and what our most important roles are, and understanding how exercise plays a role in that. And so when you get your whole spirit involved in wanting this, I think that can be very powerful. The second thing that I suggest doing is finding a trigger. So if habits are things that are occurring kind of subconsciously in our throughout our day, how do we know when it's time to do something? Well, the answer is that you've been triggered. Something in your environment has let you know that it is time to do this specific action at this specific time. And that's very powerful. It's difficult to change once you have it, but that's how powerful it is. So you can use that to your advantage by piggybacking your new exercise habit on an existing habit that's really strong. So that might be brushing your teeth. It might be your morning cup of coffee. If you're a morning exercise person, if you want to do it when you get home, then what are your existing habits when you get through, you know, when you walk through the door at the end of the day? What are you already doing that could now trigger this new exercise habit? So that's the second step. And then the third step is to get crystal clear on the action that you're going to take. Because a lot of times we fail to act because we don't know exactly what we're going to do, right? And any time that the path of least resistance is to do nothing, that's what we're going to do. So we have to be crystal clear. Today, this is what my exercise means. It means that I'm doing, you know, 10 minutes of strength training, and that's 3 sets of push-ups and then sit-ups and then squats. Like, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. I just want you to be absolutely crystal clear what your tangible action is going to take. Now, I'm going to share with you my favorite strategy on here, because oftentimes when we're taking on a habit like exercise, we're saying, okay, well, I'm going to get on the treadmill for 30 minutes. That's too big, right? It's too big. And there are going to be days where we're going to face resistance. Psychologically, we're going to say, oh, I just don't feel like it today. I didn't get a good enough sleep. I'm too busy. I've got this project that I'm working on. I just don't want to do it, right? That's what we do to ourselves, right? So on those days where you're having that conversation about why you're not going to do your habit, you're going to have a minimum requirement. This minimum requirement says, that's fine. You don't have to do your 30 minutes on the treadmill. You just have to do 1 minute. Because is there any excuse for not doing 1 minute of exercise?
Not that I can think of.
Not a single one. 1 minute every single day, no excuses. So because what we're talking about when we're creating a habit, it's not the intensity, it's not the duration of the activity that's creating the habit, it's the act of repetition. So the most important thing is that you actually do it. So if that 1 minute of exercise, that's a success. You have laid a path on that neural pathway. So go. Absolutely, positively, use your minimum requirement on those days where you're talking yourself out of it.
Awesome. So we've talked a lot about creating new habits. I want to shift gears a minute and talk about breaking habits, because it's important to cultivate good habits, but oftentimes we're doing that to try to replace or break a bad habit. And bad habits are something that slackers definitely deal with on a regular basis. So is there, you were talking about forming new neural pathways when you're creating a new habit. Is there any difference between that and breaking a bad habit? And then how do we go about breaking a bad habit?
Yeah, absolutely. Breaking bad habits is entirely different than creating new habits, because when you have a bad habit, what you already have is your neural pathway. And what you have is a shortcut. So, what you have to do is disrupt that pattern. Now, I just want to, on a brief sidebar, say that it's way more important to create healthy habits than it is to break bad habits, because if you have good habits, a few things will happen. One, you're going to have less time for your bad habits, right? Secondly, you will build that willpower muscle, because we've talked about willpower as a tank, but you can actually increase the size of that tank by accomplishing things, by taking action. So when you create a new habit, you actually increase the size of your willpower tank. That's going to give you more resources to call on when you go through this difficult effort of breaking a bad habit. And third is that we start to create an identity of this person who does these things. Like, I'm a healthy person. Why am I still smoking? I am a healthy person. Why did I just get pizza? Right? So this identity will serve to kind of create a disconnect, and will start to loosen the hold that this bad habit has on you. So that's why I always suggest, depending on how bad the habit is, right? There are ranges here, but I do suggest that people focus on creating the good ones first. But here's what you need to know to break a bad habit. A habit is made up of three parts. We have the trigger, we have an action, and we have the reward. So we think about a habit as usually as just the action, like brushing my teeth. That's a habit I have in the morning. But the trigger is actually walking into the bathroom first thing, right, as I get out of bed and turning on the light. That's where it all begins, is with that light switch. Then I brush my teeth, and then I get a reward. You do every habit for a reason. Even the worst habits, even if you're wondering, like, this habit is so bad, there can't possibly be a reason I'm doing it. But there is. You're getting something out of it. When it comes to brushing your teeth, it's that nice, tingly, clean feeling that we have. And toothbrushing did not take off in the United States until they added that sensation to toothpaste. If it's your cup of coffee, you're getting a rush of nicotine. If you get on Facebook, you're getting social connectivity, right? You're getting a reward. So the first place that you want to start when you're breaking a bad habit is to understand the anatomy of this bad habit. What is triggering it? And it might be multiple things. It could be a physical sensation. So if you're smoking, you could physically feel like something on your fingers and you're like, oh, I want to hold a cigarette. Could be a physical sensation. It could be an emotional trigger, like I'm feeling stressed out, I got to have a cigarette. It could be a desire for social connectivity, like I'm going to go hang out with my buddies and have a cigarette. So you have to understand all the different ways in which this bad habit is being triggered. And on the other side of it, to understand what you're getting out of it. Are you getting a physical reward from it, like that rush of nicotine? Are you getting a social reward from it, that you get to hang out with your buddies? Are you getting a release of stress? What is it that this bad habit is serving you? And once you know those two things, you can begin to break down. You can begin to disrupt that pattern. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It absolutely makes sense. And, you know, throughout this conversation, you've mentioned sleep several times. And sleep is where our body restores and regenerates. And it's been shown that not just Americans, but people in general aren't getting enough sleep. How important is sleep? And are there any habits we can develop to get better sleep so that we are at the top of our game every day?
Oh, you bet. Sleeping is one of our most important habits for taking care of our physical health. And remember earlier that I said your willpower runs on sleep. So if we're not getting enough sleep, we're harming ourselves physically, we're harming ourselves mentally, and we're not giving ourselves the resources that we continue to make bad choices. So sleep is super important. And there are a number of bedtime habits and there are a number of daytime habits, because a good night's sleep actually starts with what you do during the day. And we've already talked about one. Believe it or not, the most important thing you can do to get a better night's sleep is exercise. That's what the sleep studies show, is that physical activity will absolutely increase the duration of your sleep. So that's the first thing. Second thing, if you have a habit of drinking coffee or other caffeinated beverages before bedtime, you want to change that. Depending on your sensitivity, you might not have any caffeine after your first morning cup, so you have to be careful with that. Another really great habit for sleep is to tap into your circadian rhythms. And of course, this is something that our technology really lets us mess around with. The sleep studies show that blue light will actually postpone the production of melatonin in our brain. Melatonin is that sleep hormone, lets your body know it's time to go to sleep. Blue light is what our brains associates with daytime. As the sun is coming up, that's blue light. And when the sun is going down, that's red light. And of course, as we were, you know, evolving, we had fires. That's also red light. So in our brain, blue light is daytime when we should be awake. Red light is nighttime. But all of our devices give off blue light. So you want to either look into programs that change the light that your devices are giving off, or just eliminate them entirely before you go to bed. Give yourself your body a chance to start producing melatonin to get sleepy.
Yeah, and you know, slackers, the blue light thing is such a huge deal, because I'll admit right now, I am very guilty of being on my phone, either reading a website or looking at news articles or reading an ebook, whatever it is. I've got my eyes plastered on my phone screen while I'm laying down to go to bed. And it made such a huge impact on my sleep that I wasn't getting hardly any sleep at all before I installed a blue light filter. Like she was mentioning, there's apps and programs out there, not just for your phone, but also for your computers, for Windows, for Mac, for iPhone, for Android, for all the devices that, you know, we commonly use. There are blue light filters out there. And now you mentioned red light as well. I know that there's also red light generators out there now that work in conjunction to give off more red light than blue light. So rather than just filtering it, it's actually projecting a red hue and tint. And ever since I've installed that on my phone, it has made such a huge difference in helping me get to sleep and stay asleep. And it's a little thing that goes a long way, but sleep is very important to being able to form those new habits, so that you have that willpower. It's stored up in those reserves because you've got that excess energy, so that when even if you have that long day, that long hard day, maybe it was a bad day, who knows, that when you get home, you don't go for that macaroni and cheese, you go for that salad. So we'll link to some blue light filters for multiple devices over at the show notes page, slackingambition.com/39. Shifting gears again, Sharon, you're a successful author, a successful entrepreneur. What were you doing before you delved into entrepreneurship, and what motivated you to step into that scary world of being your own boss?
Well, I've actually been self-employed since 2003. For me, I was triggered by September 11th. I was working in the tech field and I realized I actually lived in New York City at the time. So it was very close to me. And I was like, wow, this is not where I'm supposed to be. And if I were to die tomorrow, I'd feel really bad that I wasted my time in the tech field. So I went back to school to get a master's degree in English literature. And when I got there, I realized, well, boy, this is not going to happen. This is not the right place for me either. And then I went to go work with my mom in the mortgage business. Because sometimes we need to learn our lessons more than once, I think. And I was in the mortgage business for about 8 years, and I was miserable. I hated. There are lots of good things about the mortgage business. There are lots of people who are well suited for it. It was not for me. And I started waking up in the middle of the night with panic attacks. And I ended up saying to a colleague one day, like, wow, if I have to do this for the rest of my life, I'd rather kill myself. And it was at that point, like, whoo, warning bells, something is wrong here. You better make some changes. So I shut down my practice and I had to figure out like what was next, like, because I didn't know anymore. I had spent so many hours working doing this thing that I didn't enjoy doing that I didn't even know who I was anymore. So it's been a long process as I've kind of figured out my interest in philanthropy, my interest in writing. And I think this is one of the things, there are some lessons here that are important. One is like, listen to your body. Sometimes your body is like the first row, first line of defense as it's trying to communicate to you that you're not happy. And the other is that it's a process, I think, to find what you enjoy doing, what you're good at, what you can be profitable at. So to give yourself some space and understanding that is not necessarily an easy process, but it's worth it. And the only way to get there is to go through it. You just have to keep taking action. You just have to keep taking steps and experimenting and trying. And eventually you figure stuff out.
Yeah, and it's so true in so many areas. What about today? Are there any areas in your life today where maybe you feel like you aren't living up to your full potential, or maybe you feel like that you're being a bit of a slacker?
Oh, Facebook. Facebook. I just the other day, I'm like, I need to put a software on here that I can limit when I'm allowed to check Facebook. I just put that on my to-do list because, you know, I'm just going to get in there for a minute because I just need a break. And then here I have 30, 45 minutes have passed. And it's hard when you use social media as part of, like, you know, your business and your practice to use it powerfully and effectively. And that's still an area that I really struggle with.
So would you say that social media and Facebook is your greatest procrastination pitfall?
It is. It is. Yeah.
Awesome. As far as managing your time, being more productive, or just overcoming slacking in general, the world we live in today is even more advanced than, say, you know, 2003, like you were mentioning before. We live in an era where the internet allows us to have a further reach, to get more done, and to have access to greater resources than ever before. What's a resource that you like to use to help you overcome slacking?
I use my to-do list. I like to have three projects that I'm working on that are kind of like big picture, because I'm a project-oriented person. I love accomplishing projects. So if I can see my project, if I can see what I need to do to accomplish it, I'm very motivated. So my to-do list is actually something I designed myself, and it's got three separate columns with the project that I'm working on it. And that's how I focus myself.
Awesome. Well, Sharon Lipinski of bestlifehabits.com, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show this week. Final opportunity for you to pitch or plug anything that you would like before we wrap it up.
Well, at bestlifehabits.com, you can download the Habit Toolbox. This will walk you through the 5 steps, and it has a worksheet in there so that whatever it is for you, exercising, meditating, a productivity habit like having a to-do list, whatever habit is that you want to create, you can take it, put it through the 5 steps, get it through the worksheet, and you will have a plan of action, and you'll know exactly what you need to do to make it happen.
And we will link to that at our show notes page at slackingambition.com/39. Sharon, thanks so much for being on Slacking Ambition. I had a blast talking to you and I really learned a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Alrighty, Slackers. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Sharon Lipinski. I learned a lot in that episode. I hope you did too. Make sure you head over to slackingambition.com/39 for the show notes. Also, if you check in the description of this episode, you'll see a link to our page on iTunes. Why don't you take a minute to click on that? Head over to iTunes and leave a 5-star rating review for this show, as it helps so much to get the show in front of more eyes and thus in more ears. Also, please make sure to share the show on all your social media. Let all your friends and family know. And finally, please consider donating 25 cents per episode. That's $1 a month over at our Patreon page at slackingambition.com/donate. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this week, Slackers. I really hope you enjoyed it. Look forward to being back with you again soon. In the meantime, just remember, there's nothing you can't achieve. Success is a habit, and you can build that habit by incorporating new strategies and also making sure that you're taking care of yourself. So give yourself a little time for some self-love, and remember that we live in the most incredible age in human history and that there's nothing you can't achieve if you set your mind to it. So until next time, I'm Matt Wells, and what's holding you back?
Thanks for listening to this episode of Slacking Ambition with Matt Wells. We'll catch you next time. Now get out there, stop slacking, and start achieving.